You're listening to the public feed of Carefree Highway Revisited, which includes only a portion of this conversation. To hear the complete discussion, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or see the show notes for details.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
What guitars did Gordon use while he was on the road most frequently?
When I first met him, and even before, because it's been on album covers, even before I got there, he was using a six string, was a Martin D28. That's the one made out of Brazilian rosewood. But he has always, his 12 string of choice has always been a Gibson B45. The blonde one that's on one cover, that was one of the guitars that got stolen. And let's put it this way, there are always people dropping off guitars wanting to sell them to Gord, right? So this B45 came in, and Al Mayer, his office manager, called me up and says, come on over, pick this up, play it for a while, tell me what you think of it. I went back and I said, it's a great axe. And Gordon has used that axe. He's probably still got the original. But of course, now he uses two B45s, so he gets out of a certain tuning problem toward the end of the show when he starts doing Early Morning Rain of the trilogy or things like that. As far as the sixth string goes, he graduated to a D45. That's the other one that was stolen. And I was upset that he bought it because I wanted it. And then he used, and Terry followed suit, handmade guitars made by a chap named McGlincy. And he started using those. They were kind of a junior dreadnought, but they had all the abalone and the mother of pearl and all the other good stuff. But then he went back to Martin, and he went back to D18s, which are interesting because there's a difference between a D18 and a D28. The D18 barks because it's made out of mahogany. It has a real attack to it. That's why most bluegrass flat pickers use a D18. The D28 is more like a fine wine. He picked up a D18 at a music store in Nashville, and that's what he's been using.
Interesting analogy. I've never played a Gibson. I do have a Martin Shenandoah, and for a while I had a Fender 12 string, but with acoustic guitars, I've always had champagne tastes and a beer budget. So I haven't, you know, always been able to get my hands on, you know, the instruments I really wanted, but I was interested. Staying with guitars for just a second, were you also responsible for the guitar tech for Red and Terry, or were you just responsible for getting the instruments there and then the guys took care of their own tech?
Well, I'll bring in Gord for a second. When he needed a guitar restrung, he usually had me do it. As far as Red and Terry go, in a limited sense, for instance, one time Red had this electric, and he'd read a music article that if the two pickups have exactly the same impedance, meaning the number of wraps around, when you play them out of phase, you get this unique sort of honky sound out of them. It's almost unique. My Telecaster, when I was playing with the Good Brothers, I had a phase reverse switch on it too. For like the Dobro solo in Alberta Bound, I played on the Telecaster with the pickups reversed, and it almost sounded like a Dobro. But the key is you have to have the exact same impedance. So Red had me doctor that up for him. I also made from scratch a distortion unit, and Red loved it. So I gave it to him. As far as Terry goes, the main thing with Terry was when they were recording the song Protocol, Terry used a phase shifter. And I'd gotten, both Pee-wee and Terry used MXR phase shifters, which I turned them on to because I'd done a show with Ann Murray and his guys were using those things. And they both loved them. But what I did was I took the case off the MXR phase shifter of Terry, and I basically, by adding more voltage, overclocked it. And it's only on Protocol. So when you hear Terry playing those licks and they're just going, that's because I was overclocking his distortion, his phase shifter. Other than that, yeah, that was really, really all I did there.
So you had a role though. That's great. When you and he were choosing venues, and maybe this is something that somebody else was responsible with, What was the process for choosing venues like? Was that based on, well, there are this many people, or this is where the record sales have been, or this is where the radio stations are? This is something that my son wanted to know. How did Gord or you go about choosing where the band was going to play?
Well, again, earlier years, later years. In the earlier years, we basically dealt through his production company, Early Morning Productions, which he still does. He would get offers coming in. I can get this university theater or this, that, or, you know, whatever. And it was presented to Al Mayer when he was the office manager, and then later Gord's older sister, Beverly, when she took over. And they would get together with Gord at one point and say, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And he'd give it a yes or no. In the later years, after sundown again, that's the key phrase, bigger promoters started to come around, and they ended up doing a lot of the booking because we trusted them. And they were, again, Tom Robin and Jerry Long. And when they formed a partnership, we couldn't help it. We called them Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry, sure.
They would organize the whole pack. Jerry Long would do what we used to call the Northwest Tour. That's where he does all the Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, Saskatoon, Vancouver, Victoria, Edmonton, Calgary, that sort of thing. So they would organize it all. Gordon would okay the whole package. And we also worked with a company called International Creative Management, ICM. Actually, they were responsible for booking Gord when this opportunity happened to start playing the casinos. And they would also supply the opening act because, again, you were in a two-show-a-night situation. It was brutal because you had a dinner show. Well, that's okay. You know, it's 8 o'clock. People are eating dinner and everything. But then there was a midnight cocktail show. And so you're not out of that dressing room until about 2:30 in the morning. And then you just had no fun after, no drinks after. Just hit the sheets, as Gordon would say.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. And if you're doing that night in and night out, if some of these guys hadn't been in their early 20s, it'd killed them. Just that stress that goes along with that.
Well, that's all the time we have for Here in the Public Feed. If you'd like to hear the rest of this conversation, along with all of our other extended and bonus episodes, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com. You can see the show notes for details.